Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We're your hosts today, Paul Wilson,
and I'm Dennis Hart.
It's Dennis Hart. We're going to have Susan Franson in.
She's going to be
a lot of great guests today.
A lot of excitement.
We have a lot jammed into this broadcast.
There's a heck of a lot of excitement, and Paul, it's been a pleasure being with you all this summer. I just want you to know that, and it's been fun working with you, and we're going to do this again, I am sure.
Well, Dennis spends his winters looking for snowdrifts in California.
And they're harder to find than they are here in
Iowa. Never have been successful. And now the news, right, Dennis?
You got it, Paul. Thank you very much. We start this week, as we always do, with a look at what made news in the Story City Herald, which reported that all that rain we had around these parts caused the Skunk River to overflow its banks in parts of Story City early last Thursday morning. Now, as you can imagine, that created flooding at the golf course, the high school football field and track, and the city's north and south parks. Riverbend Golf Course was closed Thursday because much of the course was underwater. The 8th grade football team was scheduled to play a game against Greene County Thursday afternoon, but that game was moved to Grand Junction. Also in the Herald, word about a new business that's opened in downtown Story City. It's the Yellow Cup Cafe, a coffee shop that has the motto of grab and go or grab and stay. It's a family-owned business, and the owners are Lee and Shannon Hayden and their daughters. It's located on Broad Street in Story City. In this week's Boone News Republican, word that residents in a neighborhood west of Ames and just over the Boone County line are trying to get Boone County officials to clear what they believe is a clogged drainage tile that's keeping water in their yards. A Boone County engineer said crews have inspected the area numerous times and that while the tile drains into a facility controlled by the county, the tile itself is privately owned and not the county's responsibility. And the engineer said the contractors the county occasionally uses to clear big blockages charges $175 an hour for labor. News Republican also has word that the Boone Area Humane Society recently held a workshop for children and their parents about how to read body language in a dog. That's right, in a dog. The point of the workshop was to teach everyone about warning signs that a dog shows when he or she is not comfortable and to learn how to create a safe interaction between people and canines. Humane Society Executive Director Vanessa McCutcheon said she's seen lots of dog bites, many of them because children get down to eye level with their dog and put their hands in the dog's food or try to take the animal's toys. Those are no-nos. She said parents often do not know the body language that dogs display when they are uncomfortable. Also in the News Republican, plenty of words and pictures about this past weekend's Pufferbilly Days in Boone. Among the images you're going to see this week, pictures of the parade, along with photos of some of the contests that visitors were able to take part in, such things as the annual Mud Volleyball Tournament and the Railroad Spike Driving Contest, Paul's favorite. There are also pictures of classic cars, as well as children enjoying rides on the Pufferbilly Days Midway. Don't miss it in this week's News Republican. In the Nevada Journal, word that trial was scheduled to begin yesterday for the man accused of a kidnapping and assault that took place in an Ames park last year. If he's convicted, 24-year-old Devontis David Voits could face life in prison without parole. Authorities said he pulled a woman from her car near Franklin Park, dragged her into the park, and assaulted her. Voits was arrested earlier this year while he was serving time at the Newton Correctional Facility. Journal also has a long story about the recent dedication of buddy benches and a gazebo at the Central Elementary School playground in Nevada. The story involves a 10-year-old fifth grader, a teacher who had passed away, and a Nevada High senior who was looking for an Eagle Scout project. It is an inspiring story, and you can see it in the Nevada Journal. Also in the Journal, a feature story about how a Nevada couple has taken salt, yes, salt, to a whole new level. Jennifer Knox and her husband Colin Switzer came up with their own recipes and names for their products, which so far include 13 salts and 3 sugars. They've been offering their creations to shoppers at Farmers Market in Des Moines and Ames this summer. Among the names they've given to their new salt flavors, Herky Perky, that, of course, is for Iowa Hawkeyes fans, and Sci Salt, that's right, Sci Salt for Iowa State fans. You can find out much more about these new entrepreneurs of salt in the Nevada Journal. In the Tri-County Times, a report that a part-time police officer in Huxley has been moved into a full-time job. 47-year-old Gerald Caliguri Jr., who has been a part-timer for the past 7 years, has been promoted to a full-time patrolman's position. Before joining the Huxley force, Caliguri worked full-time in the Story County Sheriff's Office, and before that, He had a 20-year career in the restaurant business. He said he's looking forward to learning the new aspects of his full-time job. One more note from the Times, a feature story about the new interim middle and high school principal at Collins Maxwell. His name, Corey Lunn. He took over when Jordan Nelson resigned. Lunn had been a school superintendent in several other districts. He said his goal this year at Collins Maxwell is to make sure students and staff have a good year. And that is your summary of the week's news from the pages of the Story City Herald, the Boone News Republican, the Nevada Journal, and the Tri-County Times. Of course, those papers will have much more news when their print editions come out this week. And a reminder, I'll be right back here on Friday with news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. So you know, Paul, the story about the dogs and what you shouldn't do, it's the same thing with my wife. When I reach down and put my hands in her food or try to take her toys, she bites me too. She just attacks my arms and all
I'm
that.
I'm surprised your marriage has lasted so long. You
can read her body language, is
yes.
that right?
Well, she puts my body on the floor and bites the arms and all that.
I would say that's extreme body language.
Indeed.
Well, just taking a look at today's broadcast, we got so many great things. Susan Franson reports on some interesting new political twists in the solar industry.
Yep.
We're going to hear about one of the true jewels in Story City. The Story City Carousel, the antique carousel. We'll be talking with Jay Wilson not only about that, but how the summer went in Story City.
Yep.
And we have the irrepressible Maggie Westfold in with one of her Points to Ponder segments. Isn't going to be fun.
You know something? If I were a listener right now, I couldn't tune away. I would be here the entire broadcast.
I'd settle back with a cup of coffee and just enjoy the morning and all our wonderful guests today. And before we put anyone on, let's hear some cool jazz.
Hi, Dennis. It's good to be back in the studio and hear your news live. It also gives me a chance to highlight a couple of news items that weren't in your news roundup. The first is the oral arguments for the Iowa Supreme Court suit against the Dakota Access on September 12th, that's today, at 9 a.m., can be watched live online at iacourt.gov, iacourt.gov. Then click on Latest News for the live stream. So for those of you who've been following that, that's the way to hear it. And the other bit is an announcement of a presentation at the Ames Public Library on Tuesday, September 18th, from 11:30 to 1 p.m., an unusual time and place, so I called the Iowa organizer for CCI Action, Matt Covington, to tell us about it.
This is an issue of interest to Iowans. First of all, in the U.S., someone turns 65 every 8 seconds. Also, 1 in 4 Iowans are baby boomers. And then you couple that with our privatized Medicaid that's been making headlines for failing to provide the care needed to people with disabilities. This is a very present, critical issue that needs addressing. So that's why CCI Action is bringing Kevin Simowitz from Caring Across Generations to Iowa for a series of meetings on this issue. Kevin is the political director for Caring Across Generations, which was founded in 2011 by the National Domestic Workers Alliance and Jobs with Justice. And it's a national initiative to transform the long care system and change the way we care in this country. Their work brings together seniors, people with disabilities, working families, and direct care workers to build a caring majority and reshape the caregiving industry. So one of the main issues is why are these caregiving, these home care worker jobs considered low skill or entry level? I mean, these are the people that are caring for our loved ones, our neighbors, our friends, or even us. So I believe that it's time to start treating this like a profession, one that can be a career. Will that take time? Will that take bold policy solutions? Will it cost money? Yeah, but if we can give tax breaks to giant corporations and others, then why can't we invest in the nation's fastest growing workforce? So I would encourage folks to come here from Kevin Simowitz with Caring Across Generations this Tuesday, September 18th. We'll be meeting from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Ames Public Library in the Rotary Room on the second floor. Lunch will be provided since this is over the noon hour, so please come, invite others. And if you have any questions or to RSVP, you can either call 515-282-0484 or email Matthew, M-A-T-T-H-E-W, at iowacci.org. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt. Our next guest, who will be talking with us about solar energy, may be better known to most of our listeners for something other than alternative energy. In the studio with us, we'll have Don Kalm, director of the Ames Electric Department, who is better known to community theater fans for his roles in Actors Productions than in managing our power sources in Ames. And on the phone, we have Tim Dwight. Yes, the Tim Dwight, former Iowa Hawkeye All-American and NFL player who became a leader in Integrated Power Corporation, a Novato, California company, in 2008, where he has been an important player in a challenging and fast-growing industry.
Now, with Governor Jerry Brown of California just signing a bill pledging California to produce 100% of its energy from non-carbon sources by 2045, we're glad to have your perspective, Tim, as a Californian. Well, we're going to talk with Tim Dwight, and he's dear to my heart because I'm a Hawkeye fan here in Cyclone Country, and I watched Tim's career unfold at Kinnick Stadium, and he's one of the fastest people on earth. And so Tim not only is a great player and played in the NFL, but also he is a forerunner of what's to come in the solar industry and is one of the people really out there trying to make that happen. And it sounds like California is the place to do it because of that legislation signed by Jerry Brown. And so it's very timely to talk with Tim, who actually is involved in California and lives in Iowa and California.
This is particularly important to us right now because Ames is trying to get into solar. Citywide, we have a solar farm, and you will occasionally see around town some yard signs that say smart solar. And I think few people know about this because they're not getting the buy-in that they need to get it started.
Well, I don't think it's real visible yet, right?
No, and that's why Don Kalm is coming in.
I'm the director of electric services here for the city of Ames, and we have two different ways of people bringing in solar into the community. Right now we have about 135 customers that have already installed solar on their own home or business. So as a customer of Ames, you can install it on your own home or business, add that on. We offer rebates, and we offer a net metering incentive for those people that want to install it and own it themselves. There are a lot of people, though, that rent their homes. They don't own, or maybe their home is facing the wrong direction, or it just isn't conducive for solar. So we're in the process right now of starting to contract for a community solar project. We've got about 13 acres down by the airport that's city-owned property. This is a city project where a person can buy half a panel, a panel, two panels, 10 panels, whatever, install it with us, and it's going to be about 11,000 panels when we're done, and you'd own a piece of the output that comes out of that community solar farm. We plan on building that probably next spring and have it in service by next summer.
That's fantastic. We're talking with Don Tecom, director of the Ames Electric Department. And you've done a lot of community theater, too, I hear, huh, Don?
Yeah, I've done a little bit of that, too.
What's your favorite part you've played?
Oh, man. Well, the last show we did was, if people remember the movie 9 to 5 with Dolly Parton.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I played Franklin Hart Jr., the mean old boss.
Oh, no.
Yes.
You probably still have scars from that performance.
I do, yes.
Well, it's nice to know that you're plugged into things other than your vocation, because I'm a theater guy myself, so I really respect your willingness to do that. Now, the unique thing here is that these folks can buy a panel. Is that right?
They're actually, the way this thing works, and there's some tax consequences and things like that, the panels initially are owned by the company that installs them, maintains them. You're basically buying the output of that panel.
Okay, so it's clear. It's important to know that differentiation.
Yes, yep. And then they maintain the panel. And they any kind of panel that goes bad, they replace it. It's all part of the contract. But you get the energy out of the panel for the next 20 years.
That's terrific. And, you know, I just hope this becomes pretty visible so more and more people know they have this option. And it's not something that you have to put on your house. You can buy into this without the construction on your rooftop. Is that right?
Absolutely, yep. You don't have to put anything at your site. We install it at the central location, and then we as a city deliver that power basically to your home.
Well, actually, one of the reasons that we're doing this program now is because in the aftermath of the Rise for the Climate last weekend, as you may know, Jerry Brown, the governor of California, signed a bill to have the state go carbon-free by 2045. And I thought, would something like that be feasible for Ames under any circumstances?
Boy, would it be feasible under any circumstances? Of course. Everything is feasible under some circumstances.
Possible. Susan, I think we might have Tim on the line right now. Is that right, Aladdin?
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
There you are.
Yes.
All right.
Well, now, Tim, tell us about your involvement.
Well, first, I'd like to congratulate Ames on being kind of one of the only utilities in the state to kind of adopt solar in a way. I've met Dom years and years ago when I first got into this industry, and you had a small little rebate for energy efficiency that actually you moved solar into, and I think Alliant and maybe one other utilities had actually a rebate like that in the state. So it was exciting to see, a municipal utility kind of start moving in the direction of solar, because the industry is obviously growing and people are starting to take more awareness of it. But as well as the new opportunity to provide solar for a lot of members or a lot of their customers to buy into a big ground mount. That's pretty exciting stuff to see that in Iowa. 11,000 panels, Dom. That's a lot. That's a big solar system.
Yeah,
which is pretty exciting to see that. So I'm sure people are pretty fired up there in Ames to be a part of that. I mean, I'd be one of the first in line to be buying my modules, being part of a whole new energy generation, as well as investing in a technology that has a nice return on your money.
Well, now, Tim, what's your role? You're involved with the industry. Describe how you got involved and exactly what's happening for you.
Well, I just had an opportunity to invest in a small startup out of California. We do a lot of the engineering side of the industry, and I thought that solar panels were kind of like a combine. It yields energy. So in Iowa, we yield corn, we yield soybeans. So I figured I'd come back from California into the state and start looking around, see what solar was going on. And so I'd making my trips up to the Capitol back in 2009 to kind of start spreading the word that solar was coming. It was starting to grow in other parts of the world that, that wasn't really feasible. And now with the cost, going down and the technology scaling, it just made sense that Iowa farmers and Iowa businesses and Iowa residents should have solar. We're 16th in the country in solar radiation. I mean, I had a lot of afternoons in football and 2-a-days out there in the sun in August, knowing that we've got plenty of sun in Iowa. It's just always been kind of the cost, as well as, certain policy measures that have changed and evolved over time to make it, more applicable and more attainable for people to go solar. So the state of Iowa is in a good location. It's in a good spot where we're at in solar. And it's been exciting to watch this industry grow since our tax credit got passed in 2012. It's really spurred a ton of growth. And a lot of these jobs are rural jobs, which means we're bringing jobs and people back to rural Iowa. It's exciting technology. It's a lot of IT-based as well. I mean, you've got connection. You've got monitoring on these systems. You're going to have a lot more flexibility with solar going forward with the energy industry. And it's pretty exciting for everybody to be involved in that.
Well, now, Tim, I'm glad you and Don already know each other. Are there going to be opportunities for you two guys to collaborate here?
Possibly. Tim is – go ahead, Tim.
No, you go first, Don.
Well, yeah, see, when a guy that runs elders, that fast says you go first, you better be running fast.
No, Tim brings a lot of experience in the solar industry with him. I remember meeting with him several times over at the utility. I think the industry is as much as it is established now, where you can go out and find a panel and install it, there is a lot of new technologies. There's new designs in solar panels that are coming out. There's some cadmium-based solar panels that are very interesting and exciting that are coming out that... we know that the panels that were probably put in 5 years ago are not as efficient as the ones today. And the more up-to-date, the more good products that can be brought in here that produce more and more energy, we can start meeting the goals of reducing our carbon footprint.
And you have a solar and wind mix, too, energy in Iowa. Because when you look out at the horizon, right, on the farm where I live, it's all red lights on the horizon, the big farm over by Colo.
Sure.
And the further north you go, the more frequently you encounter wind farms. I ran across something here called net metering. What's net metering,
okay.
Don?
So and Ames has this. What net metering is basically if you put a solar panel on your home or on your business, if it overproduces, that energy doesn't stay at the house. I mean, energy is used as it's produced. So with net metering, that excess flows onto the city's system, and it gets used up by somebody else. So net metering is a way that we can then reimburse the customer for that excess energy that they produced.
So what do you anticipate the percentage will be maybe a year from now when looking at the share of energy produced by solar in Ames? What do you think?
Well, right now, solar needs a big footprint, physically a big footprint to produce energy. We did a quick back-of-the-envelope calculation, and I thought, at one time, to meet the energy needs of Ames, I think we needed 4,000 acres of solar panels.
4,000 acres?
Something like that. It was that large, if not even a little bit larger. So solar itself isn't a large producer. Right now, we're just barely scratching the surface. Maybe a tenth of a percent of our energy is produced by solar today, whereas on a good windy month, wind is about 25% of our energy needs can be met by wind. When the community solar project goes in, we're anticipating that'll probably produce maybe 2%. So it's not a lot. And it's hard to look at it because you need so much land to do solar, and we don't want to take valuable crop land.
I just think that's tremendous. And Tim, are you splitting your time between California and Iowa or what?
I am, yeah. California is kind of the leader in solar. A lot of technologies are being deployed in those areas. So it's kind of ahead of the game. So it's important, I think, to look at all these different markets across the country to make sure that our policy here in Iowa is strong. It makes a lot of sense for everybody in this industry. Everybody needs to win. You got the utility, you got the customer, you got the environment, you got social impacts. All these things that, energy production, energy generation, all these things affect. You have to kind of take in consideration. So you try to look in markets that are kind of out ahead and leading in front, and California's one of them. Plus, they've got, a nice little ocean out there you can surf on at every other day I enjoy. So, you know, yeah, I definitely come back here quite a bit, though, and do a lot, especially during the summer times when they're really building a lot of solar routes. Usually seems like it when the farmer sees that corn about 4 or 5 feet in the air, then they start spending money. And cause most of our industry right now is very ag, because some of the expensive costs are out there on the farms because of, you know, less customers and energy they have to get out there. So we do a lot of ag. I've learned a lot about farming over the last about 8 or 9 years, and essentially not just corn and soybeans, but hogs and turkeys and all these things. How our industry here in Iowa is incredible in our agriculture. It's absolutely phenomenal, and it's great to learn about this stuff as well as see how solar can now come in and help help our Iowan fix energy costs, clean our air, you know, secure our grid. I mean, solar does a lot of things that we're starting to really realize when you start deploying these type of assets, you know, inside your grid structure, and how that can affect in so many positive ways. It takes everybody to do it.
Well,
like,
Tim, hey,
like Don was saying, like 4,000 acres is a lot of solar panels. So I'm sure, you know, that's what we look at rooftop solar,
yeah,
where, you know, most of your buildings are already disturbed that ground. So we put a lot of our solar on top of our rooftops. So I'm sure Ames is bigger than 4,000 acres. I'm sure there's a lot of rooftops we can put
that's
a lot of solar
lot of
on,
rooftop.
Don.
Yeah,
hey,
yes, it is.
Hey, this has been fun. Tim Dwight from the solar industry, and we have Don Kahm from Ames Electric Department. I could go on for another half hour. It's all very exciting. The future is here, Don. And Tim, thank you for being our guest today.
You're most welcome.
Hey, thank you. That was a lot of fun.
Okay.
Thanks, Don.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome back. It is 31 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI-FM. Thank you for joining us. I'm still Dennis Hart, and you must still be...
Paul Wearson, yes.
You haven't changed your identity since I last saw you.
Well, I'm very insecure, but yeah, I think I'm okay.
You're looking okay today on this Wednesday. It's good to be with you again.
No, today we're going to talk with Jay Wilson from the Chamber Connection in Story City about not only the wonderful antique carousel in Story City, but also we're going to have a look back at the summer and all the things that have happened in Story City. Jay, how are you?
I'm great. How are you this morning, Paul?
Very good. Tell us about the carousel. First of all, a lot of people don't know all the details about that. Explain briefly what this wonderful antique carousel is like up there in Story City.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize what it is actually an antique. It was built in 1913. All original. It's been in Story City. It traveled back and forth around local cities from 1913 when it was built until 1938 when we purchased it, and it remained in Story City permanently. So it's a long-time tradition in Story City, this carousel. So residents know it well. People come back to visit it often. But more and more people are realizing that, hey, we have this amazing antique carousel that's still in working, great working condition. That's just a piece of history, and we have had so many travelers this last summer come from all over. I actually had a lady that drove up from Tennessee just to see the carousel on one Sunday.
Is that right?
Yes.
Well, it's kind of an interesting story that's repeated at Story City. The carousel was originally owned by a man who toured with it all over Iowa. There was some kind of mix-up, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jay, but there was a mix-up about dates, you know, and he played Story City and double-booked the day, and the business community who had hired him, there was some kind of conflict, and they just bought the carousel to solve the problem. And it's been
I didn't hear that story. I like that story.
Yeah, it's true. That's how they got the carousel. It was really a scheduling mix-up, and I think some of the Norwegian businessmen in Story City said, well, if you don't want to do business, we'll just buy this thing.
And so what happened
was it was knocked down every year and stored in a barn somewhere. And so basically we're talking about a thing that was transported to different parts of Story City behind stores and in the park. And, of course, over time it deteriorated. So in the early 80s, the community got up and did all the refurbishing. We hired artists and people to restore these beautiful horses and chickens and pigs and all the things that are part of the carousel. And then the community raised money to buy this wonderful circular housing facility that houses the carousel year-round under temperature control. So it'll never decompose like it did in barn storage. And so now we've got a beautiful carousel, beautiful facility in housing it, and an army of volunteers. Is that right, Jay?
Yes. Actually, and as we've had a busy summer at the carousel, Paul, I'm telling you, it was kind of crazy. And like I said, we've had visitors from all over the United States, and we always have, but this was a busier summer than in previous years that I remember. And so more volunteers are always needed. The busier it gets, if you've got 300 people visiting in one day, sometimes two volunteers aren't enough to get through the whole day.
Well, not only are you running the carousel, and by the way, the running the carousel is down to three simple buttons. There's a yellow one, a green one, and a red one.
Correct.
And I've volunteered there a lot, and it's delightful to see the children, the small children who are really young.
Yes.
There are two possible reactions, absolute glee or absolute terror.
Correct. I've seen both of those.
Yes, right. And it's just fun to watch people discover it. On the wall is a map with pins identifying on a world map where the visitors come from. And every year, New Zealand, Australia, the people on the interstate, isn't it fascinating, Jay? Interstate 35 has people from all over the world peeling off to see the carousel.
Yes. And as a volunteer, being down there and greeting and talking to some of those people and hearing their stories too, it's just fun in so many different ways. I can't even explain how much volunteering is just a new experience for you, and how much fun you will have with it. And like you said, the smiles on the kids' faces, it's priceless. There's nothing that compares.
Jay, this is Dennis.
I just love it. I love being down there.
This is Dennis Hart. Good morning. My wife and I went up and saw it for the first time last year. We had heard about the Story City Carousel, and we were absolutely delighted by this. First of all, you've got, as Paul says, a beautiful setting there for this. The carousel itself is just a delightful piece of history, and we took our pictures in one of the cutouts that you have in there.
Oh, yeah, Ole and Lisa.
We've done that. So I just want
to
encourage people, if you haven't been to Story City to see the carousel, please do so. And you know what? My wife and I, when we come back next year, we'd love to volunteer up there if you'd have us.
Oh, that'd be great. No, we're working on we're trying to prepare a little bit in advance. So we're working on putting volunteers together this year for next year.
Ah, okay.
So if you want to call the office, we can already plug you in and you pick a date. And maybe next year comes and that date doesn't work out, we can always switch it. But
don't worry, Jay. Now that I'm on the case, I will see Dennis and Sharon up there. I guarantee that they will be at the carousel. We'll have to teach him how to make change, but he'll work the booth.
I don't know if I can handle those three buttons, though. You say there are three buttons on there. I'm only good with two most of the time. So.
Dennis, most of the time you're only using two, so you're pretty good.
Okay,
so.
I think Dennis can handle that. And we don't write it down because Dennis doesn't read, so we're going to have pictures of what happens when you press that button. Well, now, Jay, also, you might highlight some of the other things that happened this summer. You have a duck race. Talk about the duck race.
Oh, the duck race is one of my favorites. We actually, this year for the duck race was a little frustrating because we had to deal with lots of rain.
Yep.
And so our duck race originally was scheduled in June. It didn't happen until July 17th.
So you had to put it off a little bit.
Yeah. We had to put it off. But when we had it, it was finally amazing. And it was a beautiful night for the duck race. It wasn't too hot. It cooled down a little bit after all the rain and humidity. So what we do with the duck race is we literally dump thousands of ducks in the river. And they float down and they get pulled out of the river one at a time as they cross the line. And we give away prizes for those ducks as they come out in numerical order.
Now, Jay, these are not real ducks, right?
No.
These are fake ducks.
I'm not sure if we could really control 1,000 real ducks. That would be interesting. I would like to see that happen.
No, Dennis, they're the little yellow ducks you play with in the bathtub.
Rubber duckies. Okay.
Well, now, Jay, if my memory serves me right, isn't the top prize $1,000 or something like that?
Top prize is $1,000.
Wow. Okay.
And they get all kinds of things donated by vendors, don't they? They have a lot of donated prizes from Story City Merchants.
Yeah, businesses, vendors. We had over 80 businesses and vendors donate prizes.
Beautiful.
So we had over 100 people win something.
Well, I remember a friend of mine was a teenager, and he won a tea set.
Wow.
And he was embarrassed to go down and pick it up because teenage boys don't like tea sets, you know.
No. No. Yeah. Sometimes you end up with a weird bun, but then sometimes if you know a couple other people, hey, you won that, I'll trade you.
No, that's just fantastic. And I remember several years of duck races. Sometimes the river's so low that there's no real current, and the ducks just sit there.
They get beached.
Yeah,
and you have to have the fire department come with a fire hose and create waves. And then there are these teenage boys up to their chest in water under the famous Swinging Bridge, which is another great attraction.
Oh, I love the Swinging Bridge.
Yeah, and everything goes into a V. And so the one that's right in the corner of the V, that's $1,000 if your duck is in that V at the first duck to arrive.
Wow.
Fantastic. And now, Dennis, this is just a terrific event, but we should give Jay a chance to let us know what's happening this fall. What's coming up big time, Jay?
This fall, we have so much stuff. It just never stops in Story City, I think. But another addition to the duck race, Paul, that I'm not sure if you are aware of, but we had our picnic in the park right after. We would build hot dogs and hamburgers, and it was $5 per person. We served close to 100 people, so after the duck race, everybody kind of filtered over the park. We had games. We did the lutefisk throw, which is always popular.
Well, we have to explain lutefisk at another day when we have an hour.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. Well, lutefisk is a dish, a Scandinavian dish, that they cook and they cook as fish. Yeah. And it's a lot of people don't like it. I've actually never tried it, but I want to. So it's a nice Scandinavian day tradition that we chuck this fish as far as you possibly can.
And now what's going on in the fall and winter? I know you have Yule Fest coming up for Christmas, and that's a big event that spans several weeks, doesn't it?
Yes, that actually starts the day after Thanksgiving and goes through Christmas, where we have all kinds of different stuff. Churches have many events going on. We have Yule Fest Day for kids, where the kids can come downtown here and do crafts, while the parents can go out and shop and enjoy our downtown for Shop Small Saturday.
No, that's a great thing. I really endorse that Shop Small because, you know, we're in an era of box stores and huge conglomerates, and we need to support local merchants, not only in Ames, but in Story City and Nevada and all those surrounding towns. I really respect people who do business startups in these small towns. Yeah. And, boy, that's your chance to support these people. So, Jay, I really hope you highlight that as we go into the Yule Fest season. And this has been fun today. We're going to have you on again sometime, Jay. And congratulations on another great summer with the duck race and all the activities you've had for the chamber, and especially another wonderful year at the carousel. Thanks, Jay.
Thank you, Paul, so much.
See you later, Jay. Story City is a great place, as you know, Paul. You live there.
Yeah.
And so many things going on, the carousel, the parks, as you say, the duck races there. It's a fun place to be.
And we're going to make sure you're up there pressing those buttons.
I think I can press those buttons. Paul, you know, it's funny that he mentioned lutefisk, because our next personality here, Maggie Westville, talked about lutefisk a time or two ago.
That was a great segment, yeah.
Maggie has been doing what we call Points to Ponder this summer for us on this broadcast, and it has been a delight to have you all summer long, and it is still a delight to have you here. Welcome again on this Wednesday.
Thank you, Dennis. I feel the same. This has been fun, and I'm going to miss you when you head out west to live your California life for the winter. We'll think about you and look forward to your return next spring.
My wife and I will come back. We'll
promises,
come back.
Promises.
No, we'll
okay.
be here.
That's good. Today, my points to ponder today, I'd like to share thoughts with you that I've been mulling for literally a lifetime about how I would like my loved ones to care for my remains when I die. Heavy subject matter? Yes, indeed. Something some folks do not even care to think or talk about, and that's okay. That's their choice, and I honor that. But the truth is, every breath we take from the time we are born brings us one breath closer to our last. And that's not pessimism. That's the way it is. I've had strong feelings about this since my late teens, and at 72, I've not changed my thinking. So I'm about to share my ponderings with you on this important decision in life. When I die, I'd like to be cremated, no viewing, and have a traditional funeral in my church. My ashes I'd like to be divided, some buried beside my husband, and the remainder I want my family to strew with love over the breezes in the designated area near Hickory Grove Park at rural Colo, where I was blessed to have a wonderful, carefree childhood. There are many details we can all outline for our funeral service, but an important one for me is that I'd like for someone to speak of me in a similar light as that priest did of my mom at her funeral. He declared that she was a saint, and saintly she was. However, I'm unfortunately not my mom in quite enough ways, so I've got a longtime girlfriend on retainer. She offered, unsolicited, I swear, to stand and declare at my funeral that I was saintly for a price. And folks, it's costing me a bundle up front. My strong and unchanging feelings to be cremated and not viewed, in part, carry back to the after effects of my first viewing experience at 7 years of age. My beloved kindergarten teacher died from cancer. My mother was stopping by the funeral home to pay respects with all the best intentions. Mom asked if I'd like to just remember Miss Allen or if I'd like to see her one last time. Sure, I wanted to come along. I wanted to see my teacher again. Dead was not something I yet comprehended. Freddy the Leaf, nor any of those other wonderful books to help children understand loss, had not been written. With the death of her mother right after childbirth, Mom had been raised by her grandparents. They lived next door to their church in a little southern Missouri town. They attended every funeral at that church. My mother viewed bodies of the deceased about as often as she helped her grandma serve coffee, lemonade, and cake to now and then relatives who visited their home. Gatherings were gatherings, whether the guest of honor was breathing with smiling eyes or not. My memory, per se, of how my beloved teacher looked that day, 65 years ago, as she lay peacefully, was not likely what marked my young mind, though there was not much similarity between the very pale, still woman lying there right at my eye level and my smiling, loving teacher's face that I had expected to see one last time. The negative impact on my psyche, I'm fairly sure, was more a matter of a couple ornery siblings soon after, picking up on my being a little spooked by it all. Siblings will be siblings, don't we all know, and they were nothing beyond normal. They had great fun reminding me that a dead body might be lying in every nook and cranny around our home. And mark my brain, they did. Mom likely would have intervened had she been aware, but I'm not so sure that she could have undone the leftovers. After that, when I would comment to Mom on my uneasiness around folks no longer breathing, she would smile that smile and assure me with her pure, loving logic, "Now, Maggie, they're not going to hurt you at that point." Yes, I gradually got past my angst at viewing. I only do so when there is no choice. I would never be disrespectful of a family's grief. And those instances where I do view, all too often, is likely why it is no longer difficult. Viewing offers what some call closure, which they feel they need. I have yet to have issue with knowing someone is gone from my life. Yes, it can be very hard, but time helps. When I can no longer look in someone's eyes or see their smile or hear their voice, they are gone, and the void is never filled with their same presence. But for me, viewing their embalmed and made-up body does not help absorb their loss. I did not view my dear mother-in-law, who died suddenly at 59 years of age, nor did I view my beloved dad, who lived to be 81. In both instances, I had visited with them shortly before they died, and I wanted my last memory of them to be those smiling eyes. My husband and my family honored my choices and understood, and my decisions in those difficult times have rested well with me these past many years. After losing Dad, I had no idea what I would decide to do when Mom died. And when that time came and I was 59 years of age, I knew that I could and I would view my mother. And I had no concerns about not playing fair because I believed that where Dad was, he understood. And Mom looked beautiful, wearing her soft pink rose dress and coordinated jewelry as she had asked. Mom's 12 children all smiled together as we saw her there for the first time ever without that triple chin of hers. We lightly joked with one another that Mom would be pretty pleased with her new look. That realization, that lying back, does away with triple chins, inspired a poem for this poet a while after Mom's passing. It's published in Lyrical Iowa, and I think Mom would have smiled and shook her head at my silliness. It's called Selfie. Because there will come that day when a last portrait for display alongside the urn may be needed by curious crepe hangers for assessment and discussion, a final fare thee well. I'll wear that certain shade of green, smile just so, but not overly, so not to let my smirk surface. My burgundy chocolate leather couch will be my backdrop, a catch-all for each extra chin my mama gave me. I'll lay back nicely to reveal my daddy's cleft in my one true chin, the one that's lived as a triplet most of its life. No flash might make me look dead.
Maggie, it is so difficult to talk about death and dying in this country, and you have done it in a very sensitive way. What a personal memoir that was for you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I think your mic's working now.
Oh, am I? All right. Thank you, Dennis. I just think that that's a – I know a lot of people are uncomfortable talking about that, but I did, with no choice, I did develop those feelings throughout my lifetime, and they stick with me. I do honor the way anyone cares to have that taken care of. I think it's wonderful the way families handle this in so many different ways. And I've been around many – I've been a part of those decisions in my own family. So I think we all need to – think about it. Let your family know what you want and why you want that. It helps a family to have a little preparation before you're gone. None of us wants to think about gone. That's not comfortable thinking. But
we're all going to be gone.
Unfortunately, yes.
Well, now I'm fascinated by the afterlife, so I'm going to be buried clutching a little slip of paper that says, "Some assembly required."
And you're also going to have a script that says out by 53 or something like that, right?
Yeah, we need to know when the funeral ends. It has to be at 7:55 so that, you know, we can get the station break in, the theme song, and that should be on my tombstone. Out of here by 55.
You know, my parents never talked about that, and my dad died very young at the age of 68, and my mom lived until 81, and she passed away when we were living in Iowa, as a matter of fact, 35 years ago or so. And so we went back to California, and my mom had not been part of an organized church, and so I went to a church of a friend of mine, to the minister, and I asked her, Jan Everhart was her name, and I said, "Jan, I want you to do the impossible. I'm going to tell you some stories about my mom, and I want you to make people laugh. I want you to make people laugh at that funeral." So I told her some stories. She had never met my mom. Mm-hmm. She did one of the most marvelous jobs.
Wow.
She made that congregation laugh with stories about my mom's life, and that was exactly the way my mom would have wanted it. I know that, though we'd never talked about it.
Yeah.
And that was the best service that I could do for my mom at that point, was have people remember her in a light way.
Yes, that's a beautiful thing. I've been at that. I just was about 2 weeks ago at a funeral like that. Now, that minister knew that gentleman, the funeral I'm talking about, but she made us laugh. And remember, the real Earl was his name. And that's the way it should be.
That's true. The funeral is for the living.
It is.
You know, look how that minister, Dennis, followed your wishes and pleased you so much.
Yes.
And all the people who went had some enjoyable moments hearing these stories that I'm sure endeared your mother to everybody.
Yes.
And also was reflective of who she was, you know. That's marvelous that's a memorial, mm-hmm. way to think about that person that everyone can share. And funerals really are fellowship, you know, where not only the service occurs, but usually in mm-hmm. my church, it's sandwiches and cake downstairs mm-hmm. and reminiscing and talking about that person and how they were valuable and exchanging anecdotes and stories. I'm just terrified that at my funeral, some idiot's going to play that song from The Wizard of Oz. Ding dong, the wicked witch is dead.
Well, you know what, though? If you have sandwiches and cake, you'll have a big turnout, because that's always a big deal to have food, right?
Yeah,
in fact,
the more you offer, the more that will come out. And they'll all say, we're going to remember Paul very, very well. Thank you so much.
After today's program, I'm going to start planning. And, you know, I'm going to buy one of these pre-authorized things where you make all the arrangements. So I'd like to make an announcement right now. My funeral is next Wednesday, so make your
Now, Paul, that is not to say, though, that this program died, okay? We're not going to have an autopsy for this one.
My mother bought her casket ahead of time, and it was a beautiful walnut. And she actually wanted to put shelves in it and put it in her living room. And she said to me one day, you're the reason that's not in my living room. I said, thank you. Please don't do that. She said, I didn't think you'd come see me anymore. I said, might not have.
Well, you know, I'm afraid to buy a casket ahead of time or make plans, because it may come true. And I just don't want to rush it. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to rush that.
Well,
I guess it is going to come true.
No, we've actually made a topic that some people think is morbid a lot of fun.
We've had some fun with it.
I think all three of us could do each other's funeral and get a few laughs. You know?
Or we could have a combined funeral. All three of us could, you know, have one thing going at one time.
You don't have to die to have a funeral. Let's just pick a date.
How about next Thursday afternoon at 3? Thank you, Maggie, so very, very much.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure. And you have been listening to Local Talk. We have been your hosts. I am Dennis Hart, and you are
Paul Wearson. And today's program was engineered by the irreplaceable Aladdin. Local Talk airs today at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m., right here on KHOI, 89.1 FM. Also remember that you can hear a recording of this show later today online at khoifm.org, and you can find links to the guests and information that you heard during the program. Also, remember that KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley, who was a great lady indeed. If you don't know about Kate Shelley, you could read up about her. She was great. Local Talk's a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. As you could tell today, it doesn't take much. You can do this show. Come on down and join the Local Talk team.
For sure. And remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and
we'll see you again on the radio. Bye-bye.
KHOI is sponsored in part by Ames Electric Services, providing rebates to customers for upgrading to energy-efficient appliances, lighting, thermostats, and air conditioners. Smart energy rebates help you decrease your power needs, which can lower your electric bills. Learn more from www.cityofames.org/smartenergy.